Peter B. Collins News and Comments. Wednesday, April 4. Well, it's been 10 years. How's your memory holding up? 10 years ago at this time, the Bush administration was starting to collect so-called detainees and was starting to apply waterboarding and other torture techniques to them. And Jason Leopold has done it again, teamed up with Dr. Jeff Kay. In a report published yesterday at truthout.org, based on a memorandum recently released, they've learned the origins of John Yoo's torture memo, and it was from a military manual with the bland name Pre-Academic Laboratory Operating Instructions. Now, this memo was written as part of the program to train American forces to withstand torture if they became captives of an enemy. And it was turned 180 degrees, exact opposite. It became the blueprint for 7 of the 10 torture techniques that were then authorized in John Yoo's memo in the summer of 2002. And Leopold points out that the authorizing paperwork, these memos, came after the fact, after Abu Zubaydah had been waterboarded numerous times. And so this gives us new insight into the secret moves of the Bush-Cheney administration. And it's just another thread that can help unravel the cover-ups that have been holding rather firmly with a lot of help from Barack Obama now for 10 years. And I encourage you to listen to the in-depth interview posted today at peterbcollins.com. It follows yesterday's in-depth interview with former Congresswoman Elizabeth Holtzman about her book Cheating Justice, in which we explicitly discussed John Yoo's torture memo and why he retains a tenured position at the law school of the University of California, Berkeley. So I encourage you to listen to the in-depth interview, follow the links to truthout.org, read the article by Leopold and Kay, and follow the link if you have the time and the inclination. Click on the link that says Pre-Academic Laboratory Operating Instructions. That will take you to the Defense Department's webpage, where they post documents that they have to release under the Freedom of Information Act. And read for yourself. It's chilling. Because all you have to do is substitute the word detainee for the term student that is used repeatedly in this document. And here's an excerpt from our in-depth interview as Jason Leopold describes this memo and why it is significant.
This is a manual that was cited in the office, Justice Department's Office of Professional Responsibility report that was issued a couple of years ago pertaining to the legal work that John Yoo, Jay Bybee, and Stephen Bradbury, all of the Office of Legal Counsel, Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel, the work that they did in writing the what is widely referred to as the torture memo, in this case, torture memos. In that report, buried in that report, actually, is a citation that was taken directly from this manual, this instructional manual, that was presented in the context of the difference between, you know, the real world interrogations versus what's in this manual are enormous. There's a, you know, an enormous difference is that you know, one is real and one is a you know, one is mock prisoner of war setting. So this manual is actually what is known as a training manual for the survival, evasion, resistance, escape, what U.S. personnel go through in order to learn how to survive brutal interrogations, torture, if they are captured by an enemy regime.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes this important is two things. One, this is, as I indicated, it was cited in that Office of Professional Responsibility report. It's important because it's dated, at least according to the OPR report, May 7th, 2002. We know, I've confirmed with a number of sources, but we know it was shared with top White House officials, and there actually have been a number of stories that came out back in 2009 when the torture memos were released about these so-called principals committee meetings,
right,
where Cheney and Rumsfeld and Rice and legal advisor to Condoleezza Rice, where they all discussed, and John Ashcroft and Alberto Gonzalez, where they all discussed the CIA's interest, you know, in using quote unquote an alternative set of interrogation methods. And these discussions took place in between May and July of 2002, before mm-hmm. that memo was written.
And one of the critical timeline points that you disclose
yeah.
is that the torture practices preceded the paperwork that authorized them.
That's right. It is. That's very important.
Once again, you can hear the full in-depth interview with Jason Leopold. It's online today at peterbcollins.com. In London, we mentioned a couple of days ago that the British law enforcement authorities have asked for permission to expand surveillance of the general public. And I noted that it's kind of quaint that in Britain they look for permission before they start violating the rights of their citizens. Now, it's fair to say that England does not have a Bill of Rights that provides the same robust protections that we used to enjoy here in this country. But I'm pleased to see this report from London dated April 2nd. British lawmakers and rights activists joined a chorus of protest Monday against plans by the government to give the intelligence and security services the ability to monitor the phone calls, emails, text messages, and internet use of every person in the country. Now, that one sentence describes what has already happened here in the United States without our permission, without process. And when Bush started illegally wiretapping Americans, candidate Obama in the United States Senate said he was deeply opposed to wiretapping, and he would not agree to granting immunity to the phone companies that enabled it. Then after he won the nomination in August of 2008, as a way of taking any thorny issue away from the McCain campaign, Obama voted for the FISA reforms and locked in those illegal activities, which continue to this day. Now they're just considered legal, and they don't draw protest or comment from the Americans who are surveilled or our political leaders who used to say that it was wrong. And I want to commend the ACLU because they released a report nationally surveying local law enforcement officials and agencies about how they track personal cell phones and the GPS device that's embedded in most smartphones and some dumb ones, and that they do this without warrants, without a court order. And I want to add a compliment to James Temple, who's a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, and in Wednesday's paper, he's very critical of these law enforcement agencies for just ignoring the Fourth Amendment. This is unconstitutional, and yet it happens on a routine basis. The tracking takes various forms, including tapping into GPS information in emergency situations like when a child is missing. People don't get too upset about that. But departments also direct phone companies or mobile software companies like Google and Apple to provide location information, text messages, data for surveillance, and other purposes related to criminal investigations. That explicitly under the Fourth Amendment requires probable cause and a court order. And because the FBI now does this routinely, the National Security Agency is not even authorized to operate in the United States. And as we recently reported with James Bamford, they're building a huge server farm in Utah. And concurrent with that report was the change in policy from the Obama administration, extending the time period to hold information on people who are not even suspects. So you and I aren't suspected of any connection to terrorism, but they tap our phones, they grab our emails, and they can now save it for 5 years. Used to be after 6 months, they had to delete it, flush it. We don't know if they did, but that was the policy. Now the policy is for 5 years, so I guess we can infer that they get to keep it forever. When will people start to sit up and notice that their rights have been taken away? What will it take? In other news, Occupy Jerusalem. Has a nice ring to it, right? But it's not based on the Occupy Wall Street mentality. A group of Israelis have launched an occupation in a disputed building in the West Bank city of Hebron. Prime Minister Netanyahu intervened, requesting that a military order to evict them be postponed. Now, what they're doing is clearly illegal. It's part of the Jewish settlement process to squeeze out Arabs and Palestinians. And the defense ministry so far gave no indication it was backing down from plans to remove the 100 settlers using force if necessary. But when it comes to the bottom line, Bibi Netanyahu says, oh, go ahead, break the law. I mean, after all, the only victims are non-Israelis, so that's okay. Bill Kristol, that's William Kristol, you know him, the right-wing publisher of the Weekly Standard. Robert Kagan, one of his neocon buddies, they have an organization called the Foreign Policy Initiative, and I'm lucky enough to be on their email list. And they are screaming bloody murder about potential defense spending cuts that loom. And this is fallout from the failed deficit reduction negotiations. If you remember, the threat was that if they didn't make a deal to cut the budget deficit, there would be $1 trillion in cuts to defense. Now, we know that when you get through the smoke and mirrors and all the spin, what President Obama has proposed is a reduction in the rate of increase in defense spending, but not an actual cut in real dollar terms. But that's not good enough for the neocons. They support Paul Ryan of Wisconsin because in his budget, he restores about half of that money. Let me be correct. His budget seeks to restore $214 billion of the $487 billion in cuts that are proposed by the president, which are not actual cuts. And in Washington, a cut to a cut can be called a tax increase. So I just thought you'd like to know, because chances are you don't pay much attention to the neocons, but they're still out there, still trying to make sure that we spend it all on defense. And of course, that's a way to cut domestic spending. Did you know how much student loans have surged in the last decade? Total student loans in the United States now exceed $1 trillion. That's more than Americans owe on their cars and credit cards. And many students who get out of college saddled with huge debts can't find a job right now, so they can't pay back their loans, and they go back to school and run up their tab even higher. And according to the Association of Consumer Bankruptcy Attorneys, this could be the next debt bomb for the United States economy. Are you sipping a soda while you're listening to this podcast? 3 out of 4 Up 3 out of 5 California voters support a special fee on soft drinks to fight childhood obesity. This according to the respected Field poll. To pay for anti-obesity programs, 57% of voters believe local government should have the ability to tax alcohol, cigarettes, junk foods, or sweetened beverages. And the sugar water industry, of course, has already been running TV commercials with these bucolic scenes of families camping and the idea that it's just un-American for Big Brother to tax soda. It's not like they're saying, you know, we're cutting you off after 2 a day. It's just a tax. But the soda industry will fight very hard on this one. And what we know is that whether you're drinking the full-strength sodas that are sweetened with corn syrup, or you're drinking so-called diet sodas that are sweetened with very dangerous chemicals, well, the excess ingestion of soda pop isn't good for Americans, and it is a major contributor to the expansion of our collective waistlines. Make mine an iced tea, would you please? Hey, thanks for listening. Share this free podcast with your friends and tell them to sign up.
Happy trails to you.
Our goal is to double subscribers in April at peterbcollins.com. I'll appreciate your help.
Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together?